aligns himself with the truth. And it's time for you to choose a side. You're listening to Alex Jones.
Bad luck wind been blowing.
Welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight on this Sunday, December 27th, 2015. We're getting close to the end of the year. Alex Jones is going to be joining us in the next segment. He's going to be breaking down why Obama is working with ISIS to eradicate Christianity. And of course, we know that. I think the biggest story of the year, in my opinion, is the fact that ISIS is created and funded by the West, by the U.S., by Turkey, by Saudi Arabia. And yet the media and pretty much all of our people running for office are pretending that this is some kind of external boogeyman that we have absolutely nothing to do with. But we need to fear it, and we need to throw away the Constitution, all of our rights, in order to deal with it. I think that is the biggest story. And so Alex is going to be breaking that down for us in the next segment. We're also going to be talking about the real Grinches of Christmas: socialism, political correctness. We're going to talk about what's happened in Central America. Christmas is dead in the places that Bernie Sanders, I call him Bernie Sandinista, he loves Nicaragua, the Sandinistas, all of these socialist revolutions that he and the Pope push out of Central America. The fruit of that has come down on people this year especially. So we're seeing a massive collapse of the left in Central and South America. We're also going to be talking about lawsuits coming up with the TSA. John Corbett is back to sue the TSA because now they're saying, well, we're going to force you through these ineffective machines that scan you, that a lot of people believe have health issues. And of course, John Corbett has proved in the past that they are not effective. He's been able to go through, he had a lawsuit with them. He made a very public video where he showed that he could go through these carrying a gun in certain places and they would not be detected. But again, this all comes down to the loss of freedoms, the death by a thousand cuts, this incrementalism, the way they destroy and take our liberties. Another lawsuit that's being filed by Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt and others, is tackling the idea that our government would not only create these secret lists that they do to put people on terror watch lists, to put us on no-fly list, and we never know we're on this list, but now they're going to attach punishments with it. Now, whether or not you agree with the Second Amendment, whether or not you agree that people should have the right of self-defense, possessing firearms, whether or not you agree with that, that's not the issue here. The issue here is that can the government, based on an anonymous accusation, put penalties against you, withdraw certain rights, do certain actions based on something where you have no due process? You're not allowed to know what the charges are. You don't even know you've been put on this list. You don't even know you've been charged with this. You have no way to clear your name in court. You don't even know that you are on these lists until you find out you can't fly, until you find out that you can't get a gun, until you find out that other penalties that they're going to establish if we allow this precedent to be set. This is not where it's going to stop. Understand that the RICO statutes were originally targeted towards organized crime. They said, we can't get a conviction. These guys have so much money, they can hire the best lawyers, and they can get off on technicalities and loopholes. So we need to have this RICO statute where we can, if we think that this is a bad guy, we can suspend due process for them. We declare them as being a racketeer, and then we can do whatever we want. It didn't take very long before that law was used against people who were protesting at abortion clinics. And now we've got people saying, well, I don't like people who own guns, so let's use the RICO statutes to try to come after gun manufacturers. See, once you allow that principle, even though it may initially make sense, and they always put it out there in a way that it will initially make sense, once you allow that principle, they will use that to destroy all of your rights. We're also going to be talking about a referendum that's coming up in Switzerland, a referendum that would basically stop fractional banking. And we don't have time to do a tutorial on fractional banking, but we will touch on that a little bit. We have a story about a brain-dead son who was guarded by his armed father and lived to see another Christmas. We're going to be talking about many different issues, but when we come back, Alex Jones is going to be breaking down why Obama is working with ISIS to eradicate Christianity and also to eradicate America. We'll be right back.
Took my saddle in Houston, broke my leg in Santa Fe, lost my wife and a girlfriend somewhere along the way.
in defense of human liberty, Alex Jones.
I'll be looking for aid when they pull that gate.
And Alex Jones here with a special report that we're filing over the weekend to discuss the growing terror threat, not just here in the United States, Europe, but also in China as well. And with the backdrop of mainstream media and major governments telling us, brace for jihadist attacks, we're told that nothing should be done to actually screen who's coming into the country. Now, in a few minutes, I'm going to take you back into the newsroom and go over mainstream news articles and government press releases admitting that they are indeed loosening controls on people coming in from the Middle East and North Africa. In many cases, not even screening the so-called refugees, many of which have already been found in the United States and Europe to be actual jihad fighters who traveled from Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and other nations into Syria to wage jihad. Now the Russians are defeating them there with the Syrian government and people. They're flooding into Turkey. But with the heightened terror alert happening in the background, something else was announced the day before Christmas. That's right. The TSA had opt-outs for naked body scanners, namely because it violates federal and state law on taking pornographic pictures on people under 18 years of age. That's why at courthouses around the country that have put the naked body scanners in, they exempt people under the age of 18. Well, now the TSA is announcing that they changed their policy, which trumps law. Kind of like Obama has a policy to shut down over 1,000 of our coal-powered plants, doubling electricity prices the last 7 years. Congress said no to the law they tried to pass, but Obama has a policy. Well, the TSA, who now has checkpoints at train stations and on our streets and have even shown up at movie theaters and high school graduations to keep us safe, they're announcing that they're not going to let you opt out anymore. They're going to force you to go through the naked body scanners. And a lawsuit has been filed by the gentleman that proved a few years ago that you could sneak bombs through the TSA. They've never busted one terrorist with them. A real terrorist would put the bomb in a suitcase and sneak it in, like the Russian airliner that got blown up flying out of Egypt a few months ago. That's been proven. A real terrorist, like in Israel, would go up to the checkpoint line and blow up the group of people. You cannot stop people carrying out these events at the point of attack. You stop them by profiling and tracking who they are and keeping them from coming inside your country. Now, I'm going to go show you these articles in a moment. It came out in the news days after they tried to cover up the San Bernardino terror attack being terrorist, that the FBI had been on them 2 years before, specifically tracking him in and out of training camps in Pakistan, in Saudi Arabia, he and his wife. And they sent a Justice Department task force down and criminally investigated the FBI and other Homeland Security people who tried to stop the specific attacks. Why is that? Because when the attacks happen, they use it to set up more checkpoints, more TSA for citizens and people that aren't connected to terror, while leaving the borders wide open. And then separately, it's all selectively enforced, where mainstream media, pundits, political operatives can call for Donald Trump's death, and that's okay. But he comes out and says Hillary got schlonged, which I always meant beaten really bad or defeated. I mean, that's the first time I ever heard schlonged. I was in Colorado as a kid and saw a skier flip, and he went, whoa, man, that course just schlonged me. It's a Yiddish term. They're saying he's anti-Semitic now for using a Yiddish term. Folks, major universities are restricting ethnic food, Chinese, sushi, Mexican, because people are complaining it's racist to have selections on the menu different days. What's it going to be, gray gruel? So while we leave the borders open, we all get our genitals groped or put in naked body scanners while the terrorists are brought in. And while they're banning what food you can have on menus and banning a streaming of a White Christmas, they're taking all of our basic freedoms. I mean, this is crazy, but it's really happening. So let's go inside the real terror threat and how it's being used to destroy our Bill of Rights and our Constitution. You know, George W. Bush famously said the terrorists attacked us because they hate our freedom. That's actually true. The globalists that run our government, they run the terrorists. They're the real terrorists. And they're attacking us and letting ISIS and others constitute themselves and rebuild themselves, because the globalists do hate our freedoms, and they're going to use the threat they've helped create, that they've protected, to take our freedoms. Let's go in the newsroom and look at the articles for ourselves. Now, to be clear, there is an alliance between socialist governments, mainstream media, and radical Islam all over the Western world to suppress the free speech of Christians, to cover up the fact that Christians are being persecuted, and to cover up the fact that real liberals, Thomas Jefferson types, true egalitarians, are being attacked in socialist countries and Muslim countries. It's a truly sickening alliance. And you have to ask yourself, why is this happening? Because true liberalism threatens the totalitarian left that's taking over and who is allied with the controlled right worldwide. This is a synthetic form of politics where both left and right are controlled. But they're using leftist politics to launch their takeovers. So here's some of the articles I talked about. Whistleblower: Fed shut down terror investigation that could have prevented San Bernardino attack. That's a Daily Caller article. It was also in the Sacramento Bee. Goes over how the Justice Department investigated the investigators that tried to stop it. Investigated that they might have been, quote, racist, you see. Boom. The Atlantic, even the leftist Atlantic, says it's crazy. A food fight at Oberlin College. Students complain that sushi and other ethnic food are culturally stolen appropriation and racist. So different selections, just a wide selection of food, Italian, Mexican, sushi, Chinese. I wish when I was in college they had all that. That's hateful appropriation when you eat pizza. It's because you hate Italians. Let's continue. Or it's a theft of culture. Really, I thought true liberalism was about a melting pot. And then all of us being tolerant and taking what we like from each other's cultures and creating a better culture. No, they're at war with Renaissance. Let's continue. Kill Trump. Liberals react to Republican frontrunners' comments on Muslim immigration. You can read all the Twitters. Infowars.com article. And the media defended it. Another story. Kasich co-chair. You've got to take Trump out with a headshot. You can go watch the video and audio right here. So it's okay to call for killing Trump. But if you even criticize radical Islam, you must be horrible and should be shut down. Let's continue. Caliphate Cub Scouts. Now the groups are teaching children to torture and kill infidels. And there's videos of that. Oh, but that's all okay and the left won't criticize it. Hundreds of ISIS jihadists already in Europe. Associated Press. Of course there's hundreds, probably thousands. And again, the government knows this. Big bombshell, though. Seymour Hersh, U.S. military shared intelligence with Assad in defiance of Obama's CIA. That's now come out in the London Review of Books and his new book. And, of course, we already told you this years ago, but here's the news. Now, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner Hersh has actually talked to the generals. Well, we've seen the generals go public and say, we've been ordered to release al-Qaeda. We've been ordered to protect ISIS. We've been ordered to let them into the West. And it's wrong. We told you a few years ago that Dempsey and others, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs then, went to the White House and said, we're not going to take out Assad for al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia. So this was a historic moment, folks, almost as big as the general staff trying to take out Hitler, and you're not hearing about it in the news. You'd think about it when Cy Hirsch puts it out, it'd be in the news. Let's continue. Because it's part of a larger alliance between the socialist and the radical Muslims against Christianity, and even the liberal. Archbishop of Canterbury has come out and said Christians face Middle East elimination. The UN admits double the persecution of Christians the last 7 years. Oh, who got in office 7 years ago? And they're being exterminated worldwide. More persecution than Christians than all other groups combined. White Christmas PC snow job. Key report up on Infowars.com. Yes, major colleges and even college radio stations are restricting it because white Christmas is hateful. The word white is bad. It deals with snow, ladies and gentlemen. You can go see that report. This is what's happening. This is what's unfolding.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Oops, sorry, I better cut that off. It's politically incorrect. Ladies and gentlemen, you're being culturally enslaved. Wake up and say no to it. Speak out like folks at Trump rallies with Hillary for prison shirts. I'm Alex Jones signing off for Infowars.com. We're going to come back and go right back to David Knight live on the radio. Infowars.com.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. From time to time, we've been tempted to believe that society has become too complex to be managed by self-rule, that government by an elite group is superior to government for, by, and of the people.
The Alex Jones Show, because there is a war on for your mind.
Hello, me. Meet the real me.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host on this Sunday, December 27th, 2015. You know, we just heard Ronald Reagan, as he was campaigning, talk about how we can solve things on an individual basis. There was a story that I saw about Christmas, and I hope you all had a Merry Christmas. When I looked at this, I thought, this really gets to the heart of what Alexis de Tocqueville was talking about when he came to America in the early 1800s. He wrote a book. I hope you're familiar with it. It's called Democracy in America. He was a Frenchman, and he came to America, and he was curious as to why America worked so well. He was very oriented towards freedom, towards liberty, but he also had a pragmatic side to it. He looked at it, and he said, you know, what sets Americans apart from Europeans is that they use voluntary associations to solve the problems of the community, rather than having an upper class that they turn to a philanthropist or a socialist government, as they were trying to enact in France. They would do things themselves. They would work together voluntarily to solve the problems in their community, not try to solve them from the most distant place they can find, either in Washington or some global governance. No, they tried to do it in their own community, and that's one of the reasons why they were successful in it. Just talking about groups of ordinary people pooling their resources, helping their neighbors that they can see are truly in need. That always works best. And so I saw this story about what happened in Dallas. I thought, you know, this is an America that is all but gone now, but it's always good for us to remember what we can do when we work together to help people on a one-to-one basis, just doing it as an association. So this is the Omni Hotel in Dallas. They opened their door to 500 homeless people on Christmas Eve as a way of giving back to the community. They said they come in here with smiles on their faces from ear to ear. Let's play a little bit of that clip.
2011 was the first time Ed Natzhammer invited the homeless to be guests at the Omni Dallas Hotel.
They come in with the smiles on their face from ear to ear.
Smiles were on the faces of 500 men, women, and children, often overlooked. Homeless families were VIPs that Christmas Eve. Now in year five, the hotel GM wants one family to check out of his hotel and into their own home.
We are going to sort of adopt a family. We're calling it a home for the holidays. And we're going to try to find 2,500 people that can give $12.
Thank you, Grace. Thank you so much. Here, wait, get a sticker.
Omni workers are rallying behind a home for the holidays and taking from their paychecks to help.
I think that's great. I really do, because I've been in situations in my life where I didn't know where I was going to eat or stay sometimes.
The way I look at it is the Lord's blessed me beyond what I can even imagine, so why not go ahead and do what I'm supposed to do and give to others?
It's good to be a part of something bigger than yourself.
Netzhammer's big ambition of a home for the holidays came Christmas Eve a year ago. The words at the Omni this time of year, hope, peace, joy, inspired him as he greeted hundreds of homeless.
Is it the bright light, or are you a little teary-eyed when you talk about this?
You know, last year I was able to bring my 12-year-old son.
Yes, he was moved by his guests, but also what he saw in his 12-year-old son, Ryan, that day.
I got to tell you, 12-year-old kids, they're on video games all the time. It takes a lot to move them. And for my son to put down his video games and have an interest in something that was so important to me.
Exactly right.
Was pretty special.
You know, one of the things he shows there is hope. And, you know, the kind of hope that he's offering people. He says, I said, my hope is that none of you will be back in the same shape next year. See, that's the difference. When you create a welfare state, and I know I've got a relative who works as part of the welfare state up in the Northeast, up in New York, and she talks about people as her clients. You see, they understand that the breadline that they put people in is really their meal ticket. They have no incentive to get you off of that, and they hope that you're going to be here next year, because if you're not, that means that their job doesn't really have any purpose, any meaning. It's a very different perspective than when people come together to help each other individually. They know who needs the help. They know who is slacking off and doesn't need the help, who's basically shirking what they need to do. I remember when Hillary Clinton was pushing health care, was it 20-plus years ago? Right after Bill Clinton got elected, of course, Hillary Clinton was pushing Hillary Care. She was going for the whole enchilada. She wasn't trying to do this incrementalism like Obamacare. She was going for single-payer system. They actually had the audacity to tell people with a straight face that a single-payer system was going to get rid of the cost inefficiencies of having competition. What utter nonsense. I mean, you all understand, don't you, that if you got two people competing for services, yes, it is an inefficiency. It's what John D. Rockefeller said. He said competition is a sin because it hurt his profits. And so she was actually, when she's talking about a single-payer system, she is actually shilling for the John D. Rockefellers out there, the people who wrote Obamacare, the people who were trying to get Hillary Care passed. No, competition may not be good for the people who were providing the stuff. It may cut back on their profits, but that's how you get the cost down. That's how you provide a better deal to people. So I went to one of these meetings, and of course, this was a Democrat Party meeting that was run by the local congressman. It was supposed to get everybody into a rah-rah mood to push for Hillary Care. I got up and I spoke, and I used the word charity when I was talking, and I got hissed and booed like I was Donald Trump. You would not believe the animosity. I was kind of taken back by it because I didn't realize that charity was such a dirty word to the socialists. But yes, it is. That's what they really hate. They want to lie to you and tell you that a single-payer system is going to provide things more efficiently, that it's going to work. It won't. And they want to vilify people who would help each other on a one-to-one basis. That's what charity is. You know, charity really means love, right? It's taken from the old word that was translated as love in the Bible. So it's really showing love one to another at a local level, but they hate that. They think that they are entitled to what you have. That's a very different dynamic, isn't it? And you know, it doesn't work. As Margaret Thatcher said, what happens to socialism is you eventually run out of other people's money. Well, that's happened all throughout Central America. Somebody needs to tell Bernie Sanders this. Bernie Sandinista, you know, the guy who loves socialism so much, and he still hasn't learned the lesson, and his supporters haven't learned the lesson. That's the saddest thing. That here we are, 30 years later, and he still hasn't learned the lesson of socialism, the failure of it. Look at Venezuela. Christmas is dead and 2016 looks dim. This is from AFP. They say Christmas is dead, says Elise Belisario, who, like many Venezuelans, can't afford to hang decorations or make a traditional holiday meal this year. That's it. See, that's the real Grinch. The real Grinch of Christmas is socialism and, of course, political correctness, which is a tool of socialism, a tool of censorship, trying to shame people into towing the party line. Now, they go on to say, where Christmas's past brought exuberant decorations and balconies drenched in lights in Venezuela, this year, the streets are drab and dark. Now, they go on to say in this article, well, that's all changed because oil prices have plunged. No, that's one of the issues, but the real issue is socialism. I'll tell you how this is something that is much larger than just the oil economies that are there. This stretches out throughout Central America. They say people are worried more about buying food than giving gifts this year. And, of course, Venezuelans gave the opposition a landslide victory in legislative elections this year, ending the Chavez movement's 16-year monopoly on power. We're going to tell you what it looks like in the rest of Central America. We're also going to be back with information about lawsuits trying to get some of our freedoms back as the government encroaches on them. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Hank Hill, and I'm telling you what, you need to listen to Alex Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Infowars.com. Yeah.
Live from Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight. We're going to go back to the Grinch who stole Christmas. Of course, the Grinch is green. That's what we're going to see with these green policies coming up in the new year. They're going to steal your way of life. They're going to put you in the kind of poverty that we're seeing in Venezuela, where people are not worried about Christmas decorations. They're not able to get gifts. They're just worried about how they're going to afford food. And we're seeing this happen throughout all of Central and South America. We're going to go back to that. Before we do, I just want to let you know about some of the sales that we have at InfoWars. We have the six-month Prison Planet TV for free when you get a one-year subscription. That takes it down to just 10 cents a day. And, of course, Prison Planet TV is where I usually hang out, along with Jakari Jackson, Leanne McAdoo, Rob Dew, Darren McBreen, and Joe Biggs. We all report there, as well as many people behind the scenes. That's your way of supporting our operation and making sure you get it every day on HD as it is happening. And of course, you can stream that on Roku, on Boxy, as well as your computer, tablet, or cell phone. You can get that for just 10 cents a day, and you can get access to all of Alex Jones's documentaries. That is a key way to wake people up. We can always try to give as much background as we can whenever we cover a news story, but it's really the documentaries that will wake people up. So right now we've got a once-a-year special. We always do this around the beginning of the year. 6 months for free when you get an annual subscription at Prison Planet TV, just 10 cents a day. Also, we have some specials at the InfoWars store. We've got 33% off an essentials pack of Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, and Silver Bullet. We have 15% off Winter Sun Vitamin D3, 17% off of Deep Cleanse. There are a lot of specials. You'll see those at InfoWarsStore.com. It's a way to support your health, a way to support the InfoWars operation as well. Now, going back to this, as I was just mentioning, of course, Venezuela, they're seeing a lot of hardship. Yes, it is because of oil prices, but it is also because of the failed policy and the crony capitalism of the socialists. When you listen to Bernie Sanders, you would think that you don't have any crony capitalism, any corruption in a socialist government. That is pure nonsense. It is only to the extent that you have government control of things that you can have that kind of corruption. The reason we have it here is because the government has too much power, because the government has too much reach. That is why elections are becoming increasingly and exponentially more expensive here. You're not going to stop the corruption and the buying of elections by passing legislation or by public financing of campaigns. You're only going to stop it when you stop the black hole of corruption. And that comes about because we have turned over so much money and so much power to Washington. When you've got that much money and power in one place, it's going to act like a black hole for corruption. Here's a good example. It's not just Venezuela, of course, that is changing things. Argentina is throwing out their socialists. Brazil is throwing out their socialists just in the last couple of months. Now, in Argentina, this is a pro-business mayor that was elected. He was formerly a mayor. Now he is the president of Argentina. In his first week on the job, he dismantled taxes on farm exports as well as currency controls that were blamed for a flourishing black market. Now, there's also a probe that is going on there. And, of course, that is against the backdrop, they say, of not only a shrinking economy, but also widening corruption scandal at the state-run oil company. Millions of dollars in payouts from the oil giant to close allies. How does that happen? Well, that happens when the government has that kind of power, when it has that kind of control. And so socialism is not a cure, Bernie, for that kind of crony capitalism. Socialism exacerbates that kind of crony capitalism. As a matter of fact, Bernie Sanders, good friend with the Sandinistas, when he was thrown out, he was thrown out by coalition, not only of conservatives and libertarians, but also of communists, because he was nothing but a kleptocrat. And that's the way these guys always go down. They always turn into thieves. And, of course, he had taken private property from the big corporations. He had nationalized it, but it went into his pockets. And just before he was left office, after being voted out, he reprivatized those things that he had stolen. He put them back into the pockets, his own pockets and the pockets of his buddies there. Now, it's not just socialism, and it's not just the greenies that are the Grinches that are coming up. It's also political correctness, and we can see this especially in France. Political correctness and a kind of fear that is instilled by the Islamic radicals in France. They're talking about what's French for Scrooge? Well, Christmas spirit is sagging in the City of Lights in Paris. They say only 37% of French respondents said that they were looking forward to Christmas this year. And they compare that to about three quarters of the people in Denmark, Norway, Germany, the UK. They say that 76% of the French respondents said that they felt the real meaning of Christmas had been lost and had become too commercialized. But there's other issues as well. They talk about in the French markets all across France, Christmas preparations, they say, have assumed a more solemn tone this week after a driver rammed his car into the center of a Christmas market in the western part of the city of Nantes, killing one, injuring a dozen other. Two other seemingly random attacks elsewhere have added to the sense of unease and insecurity. So they've got people with fully automatic weapons guarding the different marketplaces. That kind of puts a damper on Christmas. Also puts a damper on Christmas that it's become, when you put on Christmas lights in France, you paint a target on your back from these Islamicists, even though they want to pretend that these are seemingly random acts of violence. If you want to see the real vitriol that's coming from Islam, take a look at what happened with Donald Trump when he simply put out a tweet that said, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Wow, that's pretty controversial, isn't it? Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And instead, what he got back was an amazing, of course, this is a story up on InfoWars, an amazing series of tweets from people replying, Allah Akbar, Hail Allah, I will bomb you, racist, etc., for saying Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. That's the kind of political correctness that is destroying America, destroying the freedoms that we live by. And of course, we have another article that's up on InfoWars.com. I think he's the Archbishop. He is the Archbishop of Canterbury. Justin Welby said that Islamic extremists are trying to eliminate Christians in the Middle East. And of course, it's not only the Islamic extremists. We need to understand, too, that this is something that is intricately tied to American foreign policy. It is American foreign policy to go into all of these Middle Eastern countries to create chaos, to overthrow regimes. And that's what we've been doing throughout the Middle East. We did it in Benghazi and in Libya. We are doing it in Syria. We've done it in Afghanistan, Iraq, other places. Everywhere we go, Christianity is eradicated. Places where, yes, Christians lived as a minority, and maybe they didn't have the kind of equality and the kind of treatment that we have here, but they were still able to exist no longer. Not after our foreign policy, not after we go there. So let's keep that in mind when we look at that. And let's understand, too, when everybody gets afraid of ISIS, and we should be concerned about ISIS, but understand that it isn't this magic boogeyman that just appears out of nowhere, this energizer bunny for the war on terror. This is something that is being constantly fed by the United States and by our allies. And we're going to break that down in a little bit. But first, what did the Archbishop of Canterbury said? He said Christianity is facing elimination in the Middle East at the hands of the Islamic State, their apocalypse. He said that they are igniting a trail of fear, violence, hatred, and determined oppression. ISIS is confident that these are the last days. ISIS is using force and indescribable cruelty. They seem to welcome all opposition, certain that the warfare that they unleash confirms that this is indeed the end of the world for them. And I thought it was interesting that in this article, even a chief rabbi, Ephraim Mervis, said that he urged all faiths to unite in the face of attacks on the freedom to worship. He said, and this is a rabbi talking, he said, it has been reported that persecution of Christians persists in over 100 countries, more than for any other religion. Yes, that is the state of Christianity now. And of course, it is only being exacerbated by the foreign policies of our government. I would say that it is by design. Stay with us. We're going to be right back.
Stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. And I said at the beginning of the program, I think the biggest story of 2015, of course, is that ISIS is funded and created by the Western governments, by NATO, by Turkey, by Saudi Arabia. But shh, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. We've got a story that's up on InfoWars from Zero Hedge. Confessions of an ISIS soldier. The training took place in Turkey. Yeah, and of course, we've had video that surfaced from Russia showing the massive, massive convoy of oil tankers. snaking through these roads and then going into Turkey and then going beyond Turkey. And of course, in this article, they point out in Zero Hedge, a senior Western official familiar with large cache of intelligence obtained this summer from a major raid on an ISIS safe house told The Guardian that direct dealings between Turkish officials and ranking ISIS members was now undeniable. The same official confirmed that Turkey, a longstanding member of NATO, is not just supporting ISIS, but also other jihadist groups. And of course, as I'm talking, you're seeing, if you're watching this, you're seeing the footage that Russia took of an oil convoy that they blew up. And of course, there's an incredible amount of oil tankers that are running through there. We've heard many estimates of it being something like $4 million a day that they are channeling through Turkey and then funding ISIS. Now, there was also a former ISIS communications technician that was a story that was reported. This was in Newsweek about a year ago. And that former ISIS fighter told Newsweek at the time that Turkey was allowing ISIS trucks to cross the border through Turkey, then back to the border to attack Syrian Kurds in the city of Sarikania, I think is the way you pronounce that, in northern Syria in February. ISIS militants, he said, would freely travel through Turkey in a convoy of trucks, just as we see the convoy of trucks traveling back and forth into Turkey selling oil. So you've got oil tankers as well as convoys of fighters that are going back and forth in Turkey. And he said, ISIS commanders told us to fear nothing at all, because there was full cooperation with the Turks. They even talk about how they had a training camp set up there. They said the training took place in Turkey because ISIS command thought that it was safer there than in Syria. He says in the media, they wrote that we were training in an FSA military camp, but in fact, all 60 of us were members of ISIS. And of course, he uses the word Daesh because they keep changing. They want to call it ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, Al-Qaeda. It doesn't really matter. These are all jihadi surrogates. We've talked about this earlier this week. Recently linked documents from the CIA, a report from Wayne Madsen, pointed out this has been going on for 63 years. We were using 63 years ago CIA documents showing how we were using radical Islamic jihadis against the Russians at that time. That was way before the war in Afghanistan. We've been doing that for a very long time, using Chechen terrorists, and of course, that's the way we're doing it here. And it's not just against Russia. It is about creating chaos. That's what this is truly about. And of course, now bringing them into the West. We have the corporate media ignores the Hirsch story on top brass providing intel to Syria. Another story that's up on Infowars.com. This is from Kurt Nimmo. And in it, he shows a tweet from a frequent guest of ours, Steve Pachinik. He says, here's the Seymour Hirsch article that everybody is talking about. Well, not everybody. See, the mainstream media is not telling anybody about what's going on in this. And of course, that article, just to briefly review, for those of you who don't know anything about it, understand that in 2013, when we were telling everyone that this sarin gas attack was a ruse, a false flag to try to get the United States directly involved in Syria to provide a justification for that, there were people in the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other agencies within the Pentagon, and of course, Seymour Hirsch names those people and talks about it from his sources. They were telling the Obama administration that they had signals intelligence, satellite intelligence, human intelligence showing that we were arming Al-Qaeda. But of course, Obama didn't want to hear it. He wouldn't stop his policy. And it wasn't, we all know, don't we? It wasn't because he didn't believe them. Okay, it was because he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. But they knew that he wasn't going to stop this. They didn't want to see this happening. So what was truly amazing, and of course, Seymour Hirsch lays this out in a very detailed article. We have it linked on our site. You can also, you'll be able to find it on Infowars.com. We link to the article that he put up on the London Review of Books. But in that article, and with his sources, he points out that what the people who were leaders within the military at the time did was they gave military intelligence to Germany, to Israel, to Russia, and said, here's what we know. Maybe you guys want to do something about it. That truly is the backdrop of what is going on now with Putin. And we still see that the U.S. is not, and its allies are still arming ISIS. And when they intervene in the area, what they are doing is they're attacking the enemies of ISIS. The people who are trying to destroy ISIS, we are attacking them. That truly is what is going on. It truly is a fantasy a Phantom Menace, if you want to put it that way, put it in Star Wars terms. And, you know, when I was listening to reading articles over Christmas and looking at the traditional things, you know, we always have every year, we've got NORAD that is telling everybody, we're tracking Santa Claus around the world. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, you know, this is just like the fantasy stuff they're giving us with ISIS. And, of course, we were told that you know, NORAD had no idea that anything was going on with 9/11. I remember Gore Vidal, whose dad set in place the NORAD system, said that was the thing for him that let him know that this truly was allowed to happen, that this was a false flag, that this was a lie of some sort. He said that could not have happened, because we're constantly monitoring things. So they'll tell people that they're tracking Santa Claus, but that they can't fly, they can't find these rogue airplanes. That's their story. That's the government's story. And so they say in this long article from the Daily Mail, they say the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD, which follows Santa as he leaves his top secret toy factory in the North Pole, they say international aircraft have been warned to steer clear of the North Pole as Santa Claus dashes around the world at almost the speed of light. Because, you know, he's been known to knock down steel skyscrapers when he flies by them at speed. You know, they just collapse right into their own footprint. Maybe that's what happened at 9/11. Maybe it was Santa Claus doing an early trial run. That makes as much sense as the official story that we give. But of course, they do that. That's the way that they game us. We've got an article here that Nico gave me earlier, came out of one of the TV stations here in Austin. And here's the headline. FBI wants Austin residents to be on high alert. Whoa, wow, they got some intel here. Oh, what have they got? They say regional FBI agents want Austinites to be on alert as part of an effort to get everyone to report suspicious behavior that could potentially stop a terrorist attack or an act of violence before it happens. Well, there are no credible threats, they go on to say, against Austin, but the FBI says there could be a threat that it doesn't know about yet. So worry about it. Worry about that. See, they want to keep you in a constant state of fear. So the headline to this ought to really be, the FBI says, worry Christmas and happy new fear, because that is what they're trying to promote with everybody. When we look at this TSA situation, we look at the fact that now they're saying they're not going to give you the option to opt out of going through the body scanners. You know, even if you're concerned about the health effects of those x-rays, if you're concerned about your privacy in that regard, they're not going to let you opt out of that. We need to remember that going back to October 17th, 2013, this article on InfoWars by Don Salazar, internal TSA documents say that body scanners and pat-downs are not for terrorists. And they pointed out that the TSA has quietly admitted that there is no actual threat assessing, a threat addressing basis for employing these nude body scanners. The way this came out was the same guy that you just heard Alex Jones at the beginning of the program talking about how Jonathan Corbett is now suing the TSA because they have changed the rules and said, no, we're not going to give you the option to opt out of these body scanners. We're going to force you through the body scanners if you want to fly. He's now suing them. He's an engineer who had exhibited in the past the failures of these body scanners. He sued the TSA, and as part of discovery, he was able to go through documents, and he was able to uncover amazing admissions from the TSA. What they did was they posted the lawsuit on pacer.gov, where all lawsuits get put. They initially put up an unredacted version, and then they put up the redacted version. And so you can see what they don't want us to know. What they do not want us to know is that at the time they pointed out there was it was totally ineffective. And in addition to that, they said there was no threat against airports or airplanes. That was in 2011 when they were threatening to turn Texas into a no-fly zone because we had legislators here saying you're not going to put your hands on our children. And so that was their basis to push back. The whole thing has been a lie. And now they're moving out their incremental terrorism to force you through these body scanners that are a payback to big business backers for them. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We've got a lot of articles we're going to cover in this hour. Also want to take some calls from our listeners. I mentioned what I thought was the top story of 2015. I'd like to know what you think the top story of 2015 is. Also, maybe what you would ask one of the presidential candidates. You know, they keep them very tightly confined in this little ghetto of allowed issues that they talk about every election cycle. They have a series of little issues that they'll ask the Democrats when they have their few debates, which are virtually non-existent this time around, but also a few little issues that they'll ask the Republicans. And I think that there's some really core issues that are never discussed. So I'd like to know what you think should be asked, what you would ask if you were able to ask the presidential candidates. I was just talking about NORAD and their tracking of Santa Claus, the fantasy involved in that, and how much that was like the fantasies they told us about 9/11. But what was the top thing on the wish list for people this Christmas? Well, it was guns. And we got a special report from John Bound to break that down.
It's that time of the year again, the time of the year when the Department of Homeland Security and the Fear Factory in Washington, D.C. doles out things like credible threats and a tweaking of the terror alert system. Most Americans are taking it very seriously this year as President Obama and the traitors occupying the nation's capital have doubled down on the infusion of potential jihadi terrorists flowing into the United States. And while Obama and his family vacationed far away from the maddening crowd, gun sales are soaring once again in the United States, with shoppers taking advantage of the holiday season to allay their fears of terrorism and potential gun control measures. Figures for November show that the FBI carried out some 2.2 million background checks on potential sales of guns. The figure constitutes a 24% increase on figures recorded this time last year and is the seventh consecutive month to see a record number of checks. As we previously noted, on Black Friday, a record 185,345 background checks were processed by the FBI. In October, the FBI carried out 1,976,759 instant background checks. While the figures don't represent a one-to-one calculation for gun sales, they are considered a reliable indicator of overall gun sales. Sales between private parties are not subject to background checks. FBI stats also show that almost 20 million firearm-related checks have been carried out in 2015. With 1 month still to be calculated, the overall figure should surpass 2013's record of 21,009,273 checks. Gun sales and concealed carry permit applications in the U.S. have continued to spike in the days following the terror attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, according to gun store owners. Eric Wallace, manager of Adventure Outdoors in Smyrna, Georgia, told Today,
"Ever since the Paris attacks, we've had a lot of customers coming in, buying, you know, first guns, buying guns to protect their homes, their families, and themselves.
Like any good husband, ask for the list of Christmas items that you'd like to have, and one of the items was a firearm."
In addition to the terrorist threat, President Obama has not tried to hide the fact that he intends to introduce gun control legislation via executive fiat. There could be no doubt that this is driving higher gun sales. Last week, White House Communications Director Jen Psaki told Bloomberg that within a matter of weeks, not months, Obama will review recommendations for executive orders provided to him at the request by the Department of Justice.
"I believe in people's lawful right to bear arms. I will not take your shotgun away. I will not take your rifle away. I won't take your handgun away."
The DOJ continues to work on options to allow Obama to skirt around Congress on the issue and effectively counter lawsuits that pro-Second Amendment rights groups have prepared. According to Psaki, Obama is planning a range of steps that can be taken as it relates to the people who have access to guns and how people gain access to guns, and that he will not be satisfied unless some kind of action is taken on firearms before the end of his term. However, Rand Paul has introduced legislation intended to block any effort by the incumbent president to enforce gun control by executive action, relegating the president's potential action to an advisory position. Stock up, folks. Interesting times are upon us, but don't shoot your eye out. John Bound for InfoWars.com.
Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. It's Alex Jones.
You can run on for a long time.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. And of course, we had that excellent report in the last segment from John Bound Guns are the top of Santa's list this year, talking about the massive number of background checks. That's one way that they can tell how many new guns are being sold in retail channels. And, of course, it is going off exponentially. I was in a gun store, and I heard a guy on the phone talking to somebody in his family. He says, we better get some guns now because Obama's going to take them away in the next year. And it's like, no, I wanted to tell him that ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. Just isn't going to happen. We need to understand they're going to try to do that, but we need to understand that it isn't going to happen because we're going to fight it. I mean, we're not going to just say, well, he can't do that because he will if we don't fight him. There's a lot of people who will challenge him. My biggest concern is that although we will fight over this particular issue, we don't fight over all the other cuts to our liberty. That's what is so dangerous. We need to understand the principle, and we need to shut down this whole idea that we're going to rule by executive order. I would like to see some of the presidential candidates talk about that. How about that? Have you heard any of them talk about how they shouldn't have things done by executive order? Only one I can think of is Rand Paul. And, of course, he's got a bill to try to stop Obama from doing that with guns. But I haven't heard any other presidential candidates talk about that. I think all of them, Republican or Democrat, would just love to be the next dictator in chief, where they can essentially dictate the laws to you. Ignore Congress. And, of course, will Congress do anything about it? Very few in Congress really want to do anything to block their power from being usurped by not only the executive, but also by the bureaucracies that operate as little kingdoms, as little fiefdoms, expanding their power. We've seen the FAA go out and say, well, beginning December 21st, if you don't register your drone of a half pound or more, we will fine you $27,500 just for not registering it. And we won't make that a criminal charge. We'll call it a civil action, so that you don't get any due process in court. Of course, if they want to come after you criminally, they say they can fine you $100,000 and put you in jail for 3 years. There they would have to have a trial. But to me, what is it? Isn't there something in the Constitution that I recall about excessive fines, excessive bail, things like that? Due process, remember all that? All those quaint ideas? I want to take some of your calls. I want to ask what you think the top story of 2015 was, what you would ask the presidential candidates if you had an opportunity. Let me give you that number. It's different on Sundays. It's 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-ALEX. So call in and tell us what you think the top stories are, what the top question would be if you had a chance to ask one of the presidential candidates. Before we go to any more articles or your calls, I just want to let you know some of the things that we have at InfoWars that would help you to prepare for this next year, any kind of eventuality. We have a lot of things, battery backup and a very small package that we have available. The InfoWars Premium Power Pack will charge all of your electronic devices, has the power to even jumpstart your vehicle. It's got a lot of power, but it's at a good price. It's not what you would typically see. It'd be $150 or more for that. The InfoWars Premium Power Pack is available for only $119.95. Another way that you can power things, of course, is with our InfoWars Solar Base Station Power Supply. And this is something that has solar panels as well as a battery that will be charged by those solar cells, and a power inverter that will allow you to run AC devices off of that. It provides 1,500 watts of continuous power, 3,000 watts of peak power for any emergency. And, of course, if you are familiar with these types of systems, solar panels have come down in cost and effectiveness. They've gone up in effectiveness quite a bit in the last few years. The thing that really sets them apart is the battery. And this one has an excellent battery. It's a lithium iron phosphate battery. It will last up to 8 times longer than your typical unit. The battery is really what distinguishes these units. So this has your solar collectors. It's got a battery, and it has power inverters with a lot of different types of outputs. Again, you can find that at InfoWarsStore.com. That's the InfoWars Solar Base Station. Now, as we're talking about guns, of course, a new movie that's going to be coming up, I think it previews on New Year's Day this next Friday, is The Hateful Eight. Kurt Russell has been going around promoting that. And as he went around promoting it, he keeps getting asked these questions by liberals who want to push gun control. And they keep hammering him on this. And he goes, look, guys, and as you can see, if you're watching this, it's a movie that is set in the Civil War. It's also pretty much a fantasy movie because it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. They're always over the top in terms of violence, kind of a grinder type of film. And so that's what you expect. And as he keeps pointing out to people, like, this is a work of art. It's like a painting or a song. Don't try to extrapolate this into the real world, but they won't stop. So he comes back after a little bit of this, and he really pushed back and told him what he thought about gun control. And he's continued to talk because they continue to push him on this. His latest thing that he said in an interview was, he said, this is what people need to understand. He said, now is not a good time to lay down your weapons. How will you protect yourself? And of course, they're saying, hey, we've had these shootings in San Bernardino, so we all need to give up our guns. And it's like, seriously, you really think that these people can't get their guns on a black market, that they wouldn't get their guns on a black market when they are plotting to do something as heinous as a mass shooting like that, cold-blooded murder like that? You think that would stop them? You think they're going to call up and say, you know, Muhammad, we're going to have to postpone the attack because they're all out of AR-15s here at the gun store. So they say they're going to have some in a couple of months. So maybe we should reschedule the attack for then. They can get these guns whenever and wherever they want. There's a thing called the black market. And you need to understand that. If you haven't figured that out by watching the war on drugs, if you didn't figure it out by watching alcohol prohibition, that, you know, when you prohibit stuff, it really doesn't stop it, does it? It just makes more virulent forms of it available. You want to see some really virulent forms of firearms? Enact gun prohibition. They're not going to go away. What you'll find is it's going to unleash the creativity of people on the firearms, and just as it has in the war on drugs. We've got things like meth, which I think is a horrible thing, but I don't think that meth would have existed without the war on drugs. In the same way that during alcohol prohibition, we had bathtub gin that was making people go blind. That's what happens when you create prohibition. Of course, it also corrupts law enforcement. It also destroys our rights. It also turns us into a war zone. All of those things happen because of the war on drugs. But again, going back to Kurt Russell, he says, now is not a good time to lay down your weapons. How will you protect yourself? And as he said in a previous interview, he says, what are you going to do, outlaw everything? They can use a car. They can use a bomb. They can attack people however and whenever they wish. You need to have a way to protect yourself. He says, I'm a libertarian, a hardcore one, and of course I have guns. I shoot things with them. I hunt game. And of course, this last week, we just saw the Virginia Attorney General, and his last name is Herring. His middle initial is R. I speculated that maybe the middle name, the R stands for red, as in red herring, because what he said he was going to do was not respect the concealed carry permits of 25 states. He was going to revoke that. And I had some people, when I covered that, made some good comments, something that I didn't think about. That was done in reaction to the speech by the president of Liberty University suggesting to his college students that they needed to learn how to use guns and carry concealed. And, of course, there are students who are going to be traveling to that university from a lot of different states. They'll be coming in with concealed carry permits. So that's a way to push back and attack that, I think. That's a very, I think that observation is spot on. And, of course, the governor of Virginia is none other than Terry McAuliffe, a guy whose sole qualification is being a propagandist for the Clintons. And they're trying to do everything they can to shut down carrying firearms. Now, one more article here on firearms, and I'll go to your calls. There is a lawsuit that is being put out by Gun Owners of America and another organization called Shooters Committee on Political Education. What they're doing is they're pushing back against this idea that people who are on watch lists, secret watch lists by the government, that they should have their gun rights revoked. Think about that for a moment. And I want you to also go back and look at the statistics of the people who are pushing for this. And some of the people pushing for this are Fox News. Fox News anchors are just absolutely incredulous that somebody that's on a terror watch list could actually buy a gun. Well, you know what? According to their own figures, over a period of, I think it was 5 years, 91% of the people who were on a terror watch list were able to get guns because there wasn't anything in their background. You need to understand that the terror watch list is a Star Chamber watch list. People are put on it. They don't even know why. They're put on it maybe because of an anonymous tip. That is not how we need to be taking people's property and their rights. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We are on the march. The Empire is on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Yeah, we're living on the edge.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to go to your calls right now. We're going to go to Brad, Bobby, Matthew, Frank, and many others. If you want to call in, what we're taking are your comments about the top story of 2015, or what would you ask a presidential candidate if you had a chance to ask them something? Let's go to Brad in Louisiana. Brad, go ahead.
Greetings to you, my friend. I'm calling on two counts. One is the new House Bill 4269 that's been introduced and signed by a number of representatives, Pennsylvania, New Mexico, Napolitano signed it, California, Georgia, North Carolina. And it's the preamble of it is a bill to regulate assault weapons to ensure that the right to keep and bear arms is not unlimited and for other purposes. Secondly, I would like to ask a candidate for president of the United States, what is the logic and rationale whereby any country on this globe who is faced with the possible intrusion of terrorists is shipped firearms with little regard to expense and trained at taxpayer expense when we, as the United States, are also being intimidated by terrorists, yet they want to take our guns away that we not be able to protect ourselves? I'm sorry, Dave, but I just don't see the logic in it.
Brad, what you're saying essentially is that they want all kinds of background checks and limitations on us, but they don't do any background checks on these people they're sending weapons to. They don't want to do any background checks on the people they want to bring into this country from areas that are at war with us. That's the amazing thing about this. And that bill that you're talking about, saying that the right to give him bare arms to ensure that that would not be unlimited, that would be a direct contradiction to the Second Amendment. I mean, right. The Second Amendment is saying that...
proposed to the Judiciary Committee before it moves on, but this is an actual, it's called the Gun Legislation Act of 2015, and I just finished reading it. I got a copy of it off of the website for the Congress.
Well, of course, the way they have traditionally come after guns, and it's the way I think they're going to continue to do it, is by an incremental infringement. That's what the founders knew. They knew that it wasn't ever going to come a time when a government's going to come to a well-armed citizenry and say, turn over your guns. No, they will do it by gradual, incremental infringement. That's why the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed. They're going to come after you, taking it away around the edges, come after you by saying that it's not rights, it's privileges that we grant, and now we're going to set up the terms of those privileges that we grant to you. There will be a lot of strong legal challenges to that, and we just have to say that when it push comes to shove, people will just not comply. If the political system is so corrupt that they're going to allow the constitutional amendments to be taken down without an amendment process, then we basically don't have a government anymore. And I want to just add to what I was talking about in terms of the lawsuit that is being filed by Gun Owners of America and others. This is what they had to say. They said permanent deprivation of a fundamental civil right cannot and should not occur because something as small as an alleged anonymous tip, placed by an individual in a secret database managed by the Attorney General, the FBI, and or the TSC, to which the individual has no right of access, no method of recourse. Understand the basis of this. When they say they're going to take away people's rights on the basis of you being put on some government list, this is nothing other than a McCarthyism of the left. You want to talk about secret lists? You want to talk about blacklists? You want to talk about lists where you don't know that you're on them? Think about how this contradicts every aspect of the Sixth Amendment. Sixth Amendment says you're going to have a speedy and a public trial. You're going to be confronted with your accusers. You're going to be informed of the nature of the accusations. You're going to have a chance to confront those people who are accusing you. They're not going to be anonymous people who supposedly called into some agency in secret, and then they put you on a secret database that you're not allowed to know of. No, you're also going to have the capability to call witnesses to back up your case, even an attorney. A counsel for your defense. All of those things are guaranteed in the Constitution. They're throwing away each and every one of those procedures in order to come after the guns. And I would say to the liberals who are so afraid of guns that you need to be more afraid of a government that will throw out every aspect of due process that has protected your rights over the centuries. That's what you need to be afraid of. That's the real threat to you. A government that would destroy everything about due process. And that's what they're doing when they call on the government to take people's rights because they are on some secret list that they've never, they don't know why they're on it. They have no chance to contest the fact that they're on it. They have absolutely no due process. Thank you, Brad. Let's move on to Bobby in Pennsylvania. Bobby, go ahead.
Hey, David Knight. Honored to talk to you.
Well, thank you for calling.
I guess I don't have a specific story for 2015. I guess the general part would just be how in our face it is on the news with the political correctness. I even got sucked into watching an episode of Grey's Anatomy because of my girlfriend, and at the very end, they threw in the pitch of white privilege. Had to throw it in there, and that's a huge show. And I guess my second part of that is just how unaware everyone seems to be about how it's all connected. I listen to you guys, and I hear, you know, the stories, I see it, and it just clicks. It makes sense. And I say, oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Well, I tell you, Bobby, I think where people don't realize where this is coming from, and it's really coming from not only the media is part of it, but it is really, really hammered into the kids in the government schools. Government schools have always been a tool of social engineering. Plato talked about it in Plato's Republic. He wanted to get rid of the family. And he wanted the children to not even know who their parents were. So what he did was he promoted a very hedonistic lifestyle with no marriage, open sex, going back and forth. So they wouldn't know who their parents were. So they would be raised by the government. And every tyrant since the time of Plato and probably even before then, he said what everybody knew. But since that time, everybody has said, and you've heard it many times, give me a child at the age of fill in the blank and give them to me for a few years at a very young age, and they will be mine for life. That is why a taxpayer compulsory educational system was a plank of the Communist Party. That is the way you engineer the next generation. And that is something that has been going on. That is the purpose of schools. It's not to give kids the tools of learning. It's not to make them independent thinkers. No, that was what a liberal education was. That was what the goal of a liberal education was. No, the goal of a government education is to make you follow the prescriptions that they throw to you, and whether that is the myth of global warming or whether that is white privilege or whatever, that is what they are pushing. They're using it as social engineering. That's why Common Core looks so idiotic. They're deliberately dumbing down people, as Charlotte Iserby and Phyllis Schlafly pointed out in their book 30 years ago. It's a policy of deliberate dumbing down. It is a policy of control by the government, and that's where this is all coming from. Stay with us. We've got to go to break. We're going to come back with more of your calls. Thank you so much for Bobby in Pennsylvania. We're going to come back with Matthew and Frank, Charles and Michelle and many others. We'll be right back.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from the Infowars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, and we're taking your calls on what would be the top story of 2015 that you think, or what would you ask a presidential candidate if you had a chance to ask them a question? Before I go back to the calls, I just wanted to point out a couple of articles about what's called self-driving cars. Of course, they're actually robot cars that are controlled by the government. That's where this is really going, folks. So I have a self-driving car right now. I drive myself. That's what's meant by an automobile. That means self-moving. That means I have freedom to move around this country. That was the great celebration of the mid-20th century. Remember, see the USA in a Chevrolet? I'm old enough to remember that jingle. That was what they were selling people, the freedom of movement, to move around. I remember going to a local city council meeting in Raleigh, And at the time, this is before the Soviet Union fell, we had a councilwoman who had gone to Moscow, and she was just rhapsodic about how you could go anywhere in Moscow and pay a nickel for public transportation. We needed that type of thing in the little town of Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's like, well, you know what, lady? It didn't cost them a nickel to move around. It cost them all of their freedom, because when you have the government controlling transportation, when you have the government controlling private property and wealth, you've lost everything. But that's her idea of nirvana, okay? That was what the government socialists always want. They want to control everything in your life. They want to control your transportation, your movement, and now they think they've got it with these self-driving cars. Now, interestingly enough, the California DMV is not going to be as liberal with driving permits in California, and there's maybe a good reason for that. These cars have had an accident rate that is 5 times that of conventional cars. Now, Google will tell you that it's not their fault, that it is always the fault of the human drivers, not saying that it's the fault of their human programmers. But, of course, if you have an accident rate that is 5 times the rate of everybody else because people are running into you from behind, I mean, it tells people that you're doing something that is stupid, unpredictable, and that's what these cars are doing. They point out that they're going to mandate that an autonomous vehicle be operated by a licensed driver who could take over if necessary. The driver would also be on the hook for any traffic violations. Well, Google said they were gravely disappointed in that, because that kind of puts a little crimp in where they want to go. But, of course, I've got this other article from Market Watch, and they're saying Henry Ford was a smart guy, but he never did the math when he decided to put every American household on wheels. See, it's a horrible thing. They have this Malthusian vision that it's a horrible thing that we all have cars. They say it's not just a lot of cars that we have. It's an ocean of cars. It's an inundation. And yet, policymakers and common folk alike have been powerless against the siren song of the automobile. Really? Really? Only in your little ivory tower of the media and the socialist government is that really considered to be a problem. See, we like the fact, I like the fact that I can move around, that I don't have to inform the government as to where I'm going. If you look at that article, you can see their picture of the future where they have self-driving cars, and you got the family sitting there, they're all turned around, nobody's driving. They're playing a little board game, because that's what you would do in the 50s. You didn't have Facebook to hang out on. Is that really that valuable, that we're going to give up our freedom so that we can spend more time on Facebook when we're in the cars, when we're commuting? You know, I talked about Alexis de Tocqueville and the fact that he came to America in 1835. He published Democracy in America. One of the things that he talked about was how slavery comes to us. And listen to this. This is almost 200 years ago, but it really does apply, especially when we talk about private car ownership, as I talk about in this article, on the road to becoming a rarity. He says, "What good does it do me, after all, if an ever watchful authority keeps an eye out to ensure that my pleasures will be tranquil and races ahead of me to ward off all danger, sparing me the need to even think about such things?" Think about this in the context of this major infringement on your freedoms, okay? "If that authority, even as it removes the smallest thorns from my path, is also an absolute master of my liberty and my life." That is the Faustian bargain they're asking you to do when you give up your freedom of movement. "If it monopolizes vitality and existence to such a degree that when it languishes, everything around it must also languish. When it sleeps, everything must also sleep. And when it dies, everything must also perish." That's the problem with consolidating all power to a few people in the central government that are going to control every aspect of your movement. Let's go back to your calls. Let's go to Charles in Georgia. Charles, go ahead.
How you doing, Mr. David Knight? It's good to speak with you again.
Thank you for calling.
And what I would say to the president or to anybody running for office, I wouldn't say anything to them, because they should already know what the Constitution says. They know what the Founding Fathers laid out to us. And it's up to we the people to kick them out of office if they're not doing what the Founding Fathers instructed that they should be doing. It should be mass riots. There should be not riots, but protests all over America. Protests. Everybody should be out. There should be massive protest movement about the preservation of the liberty for all of the people. Let me just read two quick quotes from Thomas Jefferson. One was where he said, quote, "A nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved.
Yes.
And number two, he said, educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. So it's up to us, the people, to preserve our liberty, not government or not anybody running for office. It's up to we, the people. If they don't do what the founding fathers laid out to them, we kick them out of office, plain and simple.
I agree. Let me ask you, Charles, what do you think about jury nullification?
We should still just go by the Constitution. I mean, everybody says that as far as the whole jury system goes, we should all just obey the Constitution. Everybody should just obey the Constitution and just do what the founding fathers laid out to us again.
I agree.
Just like what Obama did with the whole gay marriage thing. People like, well, there's a bunch of liberals that go around talking about, oh, well, that's perfectly constitutional. I said, no, it's not. When have you ever known the Supreme Court to make a law?
Let me tell you, Charles, you had a great quote there from Thomas Jefferson saying, what is essential for us to not become slaves is to know what our rights are. And I think it's very, very important for us to know the purpose of not only that we have a right to be confronted with the charges against us so that we don't have things taken away from us by being put on some super secret list and some star chamber proceedings, accusations done anonymously. No, we need to stand up for that. And we need to also understand the value of a jury. And in order to do that, we need to understand that juries can refuse to convict people even if they are guilty of the law being broken, if that law is unjust, if the penalties that come with breaking that law are out of bounds. That's something I think that is very important. I have a story here on my desk about a guy who held off the medical workers because they said they were going to turn off life support for his son who was in a coma. That was a year ago. Now they're celebrating Christmas. Now, what happened in the interim was he believed that his son was not brain dead. He saw signs of life, and it sounds very much like the Terry Schiavo situation. But he went in, he had an arm standoff, and just as the SWAT team was getting there, his son squeezed his hand. The SWAT team came in. They could see that he was making eye contact. Then they gave him medical treatment, and he survived. The father, however, was sentenced to 10 months in prison. Now, here's where jury nullification comes in. With jury nullification, you would say, this guy did not harm anybody. He was protecting his son from doctor. I mean, the doctors are the ones, I think, who should have gone to jail for attempted murder, or at least sued for malpractice. Nevertheless, they sent him to jail for 10 months. If I was on a jury, I would refuse to send that man to jail. Yes, he broke the law. And his son said, well, a law was broken. It was done for all the right reasons. You have to look at the purpose of what was going on. You have to look at the penalties involved. And as a juror, you have not only the right, but the duty to shut that down. That could be done at the local, the state, or the federal level when authority is abused. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to try to get through as many phone calls as we can. We've got the phone lines are loaded here in our last segment. Before we do, real quickly, I just want to let you know that we have a lot of specials at InfoWarsStore.com. This is a time to give the gift of total health to yourself, to your family. We've got 20% off nascent iodine. We have 15% off of winter sun, vitamin D3. We also have several packs that are available with discounts. We got 33% off the essentials pack. That's Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Super Male Vitality, and Silver Bullet. Take a look at those. Take a look at the special we got on Prison Planet TV. 6 months. It's the first time we've done that many free months when you get an annual subscription. 6 months for free when you sign up for a one-year subscription. That's only 10 cents a day. A great way to support our operation. A great way to give the gift of information. And finally, we have the InfoWars Solar Base Station Power Supply. This is exclusively available for a special introductory pricing at InfoWarsStore.com. These are solar panels. combined with a inverter and a battery backup. And that's the key thing. It's a lithium iron phosphate battery. It'll last up to 8 times longer than your typical unit. It'll have 1,500 watts of continuous power, 3,000 watts of peak power. Something that you can use for any emergency. It's a great thing to have in reserve. Let's go back to our callers. Let's go to O'Brien in Maryland. O'Brien, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the biggest news story of the year, besides the one with Donald Trump coming on the air, has got to be the one with when Matt Drudge showed up.
Oh, yeah, that was huge. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That was a big thing because, and it's very important because, you know, nobody is bigger in news than Matt Drudge. So when he shows up to your operation to lend you some support and to talk about his concerns about freedom of speech and the kind of rules and regulations that are being planned both in Europe as well as in America to cut down the freedom of the internet, that was a huge story. And Matt Drudge wanted to get that information out to everybody. It's very, very important that we understand where the attack is going to be coming for the next year. I agree. Thank you so much, Brian. Let's go to David in California. I want to try to run through these quickly to give everybody a chance. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, you know, August 1st, 2012, certified hero Doug Millar earned a lifetime training order from Michael Aquino. Do you know who Michael Aquino is?
Yeah, he was a Satanist who was very high up in the NSA and basically was accused of pedophilia and some other things, but got a pass because he's very well connected. Yeah, I know exactly who he is.
Yeah, well, I've got the phone number of this guy, Doug Millar. He was an excellent interview. I mean, an excellent one, David, because Judge Don Sullivan allowed him to expose Michael Aquino in court, show what a dirtbag Michael Aquino did, how he murdered all those children, and yet didn't have him arrested. He had to pay $365 to the court for this restraining order. Did you hear that?
It's kind of breaking up. I didn't hear all of that. But, yeah, I'm familiar with the situation with Michael Aquino to some degree, and a very amazing character. And, of course, it does show a lot of the dark levels of what's going on in our government. It's not any surprise to see the kind of criminality that we have our secret dark side of the government is engaged in. We have individuals who are openly talking about, you know, setting up their satanic rituals and are accused of the types of things that we saw alleged of that. It's very, very suspicious. Let's go to, I agree, let's go to Matthew in Oregon. Matthew, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I've come across a number of Trump supporters that make the claim, well, he's made his own money, he's not going to be under the influence of, you know, the corporate interests. But if I'm not wrong, he's declared bankruptcy a number of times in his career, so plenty of people have gotten screwed on his way to amassing wealth. And secondly, he's admitted to buying influence among all the people in Washington. So how can we trust that this guy has an ounce of integrity or any character whatsoever? He hasn't said what his agenda is. He's, you know, throwing a bunch of fastballs out there that, you know, it's easy to knock into the upper deck with the rest of the criminals and their actions. But what is the guy's agenda other than slick talk?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying in terms of the bankruptcies and that sort of thing. Of course, he would say and has said that those were not his personal bankruptcies. Those were companies that he had a tangential involvement in. I understand the veil of corporations and limited liabilities with that, but it does, I think, bring up an interesting issue of integrity. And, of course, one of the things that has concerned me from the very beginning, and I've talked about it from the very beginning, is his support of the use of eminent domain for private individuals like him to take your property, not just for public use, but for an individual private use. And, of course, he supports that. He supports the Kelo decision that the Supreme Court had. I think that is very concerning. Of course, where his support has come from, and I think the important things that he's brought to the race have been to talk about issues that the other presidential candidates won't talk about, and to talk about them in a way that defies political correctness. I don't think we can underestimate how important it is for us to push back against political correctness. That is a very, very subtle but insidious way to to censor people, to shut up any kind of free speech in the name of tolerance, and it is very intolerant. And so it is great to see somebody who is going to, in a very ham-fisted way in many cases, but just to bluntly say, hey, you're not going to intimidate me, you're not going to shame me with this. I mean, when Hillary Clinton is bringing in Bill Clinton, he comes out and he says, well, you know, he has a penchant for sexism. I mean, that is the most understated thing I've seen Donald Trump say, to say that the sexual predator Bill Clinton has a penchant for sexism. But of course, everybody understands that what's behind that is the fact that Bill Clinton is somebody who's been a sexual predator of women. And when Hillary Clinton wants to run as the Joan of Arc representing feminism, that's really going to kind of blow back against her. So I think it's very important that we have this discussion about how our country is being remade in terms of open borders. What's behind that? I would like to see more of an understanding that that is largely happening because people are being brought in by policies of entitlements, by policies of the drug war. That's what's really pulling people in, just as we try to understand that we're not going to have any control over the exponential growth in spending that's happening with presidential elections. As long as we have the kind of money and power in Washington, it's going to suck criminals into that system. Well, as long as we have the kind of policies of entitlement and the drug war that we have, we're going to have people coming through that wall regardless of any kind of wall that we put there. So, yeah, I agree. I think we need to look at this, and I want to see where these candidates stand on issues of liberty. That's what I would really like to know, where they are. Let's go to Frank in North Carolina. Frank.
I'd like to ask the candidates if they believe that white genocide is a legitimate concern of Europeans and people of European descent, and do we have a right to work in the interest and preservation of our people and the way every other group is applauded for doing. Also, I heard a review on NPR the other morning, early in the morning, about the, it was a review of the new Quentin Tarantino movie, I forget the name of it, but its primary focus seems to be pushing the liberal white guilt agenda.
Oh, really?
On the American people.
Would that be Hateful Eight? Was that the one that Kurt Russell was in? Oh, okay. Interesting.
Hateful Eight, yeah. It's all about pushing the liberal white guilt agenda. White people are evil and all of that. So I think that pretty much overrides any concerns of, you know, the establishment will have on that. And I think in contemporary times, I think if there's any privilege in America, I think the concern should be over Jewish privilege, because they're the ones that have all the power, or most of the power.
Well, you know, when you're talking about, I hadn't heard that about that particular movie. I know that the new Star Wars, J.J. Abrams, I heard an interview after I had seen it. We talked about how it was absolutely ridiculous how they were pushing this little girl as a superhero, and to the extent that they pushed her in this movie. And of course, I heard the interview with J.J. Abrams, and he was very consciously doing that. He was very consciously turning what is a guy's film into a feminist statement. And I saw an article that was linked by Drudge, and it was a feminist saying, you know what, it's okay to have guy movies, just like it's okay to have girl movies. We can have both of these types of things. We don't have to rub people's nose in it all the time. But of course, as we pointed out, it coincides with the movement that they want to establish women in combat. This is an agenda that the Pentagon wants to have. But the broader perspective here is to push the idea that women should be in charge of everything. And when you talk about the fact that they constantly talk about white privilege, but they don't talk about white genocide, of course. So I agree with you that white people, Christians, males, they're the only ones who can't be proud of what they are. Of course, they have to have their noses rubbed into the dirt. Well, I'm sorry I can't get to the rest of the callers. We truly did get the phone lines backed up. But that's it for today. We are out of time. Join us tomorrow. Alex Jones will be back for the Alex Jones Radio Show at 11 Central, 12 Eastern tomorrow morning.